Technorama episode 498, cheaper than Super Bowl ads.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, I saw this amazing ad on the Super Bowl for this amazing thing. Where can I buy it?
Over there, in the media corner.
Shut up and take my money!
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are joining us fresh from the Super Bowl, welcome to the show. We appreciate you tearing yourself away from that intriguing event. If you are returning, welcome, loyal viewer, watcher, listener, returner. I am Chuck Tomasi from Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me all the way from South Carolina is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm feeling a little flat, deflated.
Deflated. You have deflate gate?
That's right.
Also joining us here in the Binary Studio, Phoenix, is the one and only Jack Mangan.
Yes, that's right. It is February, and I am wearing shorts.
I am, too. It's a good time to be in Phoenix. February, March, and April, I think, are my favorite.
How was the weather
time.
Today?
Oh, what do we have? About 75 was the high?
Yeah, I was out riding my bike.
Sunny.
Nice.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
There's a nice circle around the moon. Donna noticed a big halo around the moon, meaning high altitude ice crystals. Could be snow tomorrow.
Don't fly your suit of armor too high then.
In Wisconsin, that means snow tomorrow.
Sailor take warning in Wisconsin.
What is it here? Cactus take warning?
It's a cactus freeze warning.
All right. We're going to get started. But before we do that, I want to give a shout out to the podcaster meetup in Chandler this past Friday. Had a great time talking with a lot of people. Yeah, there's a monthly podcaster meetup in Chandler.
Cool.
This is the second one I've been to. And they asked me to do kind of a podcast workshop. There's people who are listeners. There's people who want to start. There's people who have been doing podcasts for a while. And it was a good time. Got to meet a lot of cool people. And
new people or some people that you may have heard of before?
Nobody I heard of before. The closest we got was one girl, Trish. She knew Evo. And I know Evo. And we had fun with that for a while.
Yeah, but everybody knows Evo.
If you knew Evo like I knew Evo. Oh, wait.
You're right. Yeah. No. Stop.
Hey, say nothing of his carrot and tomatoes picture he posted a couple of days ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We had a bit of a delay posting the question of the week. And when I mean bit of a delay, it didn't get posted until a few hours before showtime.
Well, in all fairness, we did announce it on the show. But.
We did, but we got Zippo response from that, insofar as I can tell. Oh, forgot to check the voicemail line again. Did you?
I didn't. Oh, yeah, I did. There was nothing
in there.
Actually, there were four voicemails.
Cue the crickets.
But they all sounded like this. Beep. Beep.
I don't know what dialed the listener line again.
Probably.
So the question last week was, what is your favorite quote from science fiction? And if there was ever a late entry that could get us some traffic, it was this question. Because the last 4 hours have just been off the wall. Mike Wills writes in. He says, "We will not sacrifice the Enterprise. We've made too many compromises already. Too many retreats. They invade our space and we fall back. They assimilate entire worlds and we fall back. Not again. The line must be drawn here.
Yeah.
This far. No further. And I will make them pay for what they have done." So I had to write back, "As you wish, have fun storming the castle."
Yeah. What's that from? I don't know. I'm kidding.
There were a couple in here that I could not identify. Oh, Sinful and Tiffany both wrote multipass. That was great that those two were on the same wavelength.
Yeah, that's funny.
Claudio wrote in a plethora of things. He was just a font of quotes. "Whoa, I know kung fu." He also wrote, "I fight for the users." And Eric Alexander.
Hey, wait a minute. Yes. Those two actually go together.
We have an ending.
That's true. The Matrix and Tron.
Oh, yeah.
And you left out, my God, it's full of stars from Claudio.
Oh, and Claudio had an entire poem written in there from Interstellar. We have an indentation problem here that kind of skewed things out of order, and I apologize. Eric Alexander says, never tell me the odds, but Claudio comes back and says, I have a bad feeling about this. Scott Tyler, which I feel his quote is appropriate. Great Scott!
Yes. Not really, but great Scott!
I think he needs a shirt that says that. That's all. We just got to get him a shirt.
Just great Scott. Just the words.
Right. Sarah Helwig, who is a friend from another lifetime, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away when I used to live in Marquette, Michigan, enjoys, I'm a doctor, not a fill-in-the-blank here. Yeah. Jack, who didn't know if he was going to be here till the last minute, has written, you want to read this? Because you read it in your own voice better than I do.
Oh, sure. This guy, Jack Mangan, is a hack. All right, so of course the quote is from Blade Runner. I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I've watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain.
You know what? That was the better delivery than Rutger Hauer.
Thank you.
Wow.
I'm in the next one, actually.
Brought me to tears.
I'm in the sequel.
You're in the next one. Yeah, the next, that's right.
They are coming out with a new one. That's right.
Yeah.
Michael Slobodnik, coworker at ServiceNow, writes, come on, you apes. You want to live forever? I still like more of the, you had mentioned Ahab with the other quote, but the adjustments they made to Wrath of Khan for Moby Dick. I'll chase him around the moons of Nibia and around Antares Maelstrom and round partitions of flames before I give him up.
That's a great quote.
And then the one that goes with that about Picard said the one about if his chest had been a cannon, he'd have shot his heart upon him. But Khan makes another quote. For hate's sake, I grapple with thee.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not the same though. They adjusted it there too. Jose Gonzalez.
I've given you no word to keep.
From hell's heart, I stab at thee.
There she is.
Fire.
Anyway, moving on. We got a lot of these. Jose Gonzalez is from Firefly. You want to run this ship? Yeah. Well, you can't.
Yeah, I like that one.
With Mal and Jane.
Actually, it's much better when you see the video, though.
Yes, yeah. He included a video in the link. So go to our page.
Is he like just Jane? Like no hesitation. Yeah. Yes.
And he caught Mal off guard. Yeah. Like, Wayne Pittenger says, "Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal." Staying on the Firefly theme, and Mark in Memphis also does. Love, you can learn all the math in the verse, but you can take a boat in the air that you don't love. She'll shake you off just as sure as the timing of the world, turning of the world. Excuse me. Whew, spear's getting hit to me. Turning of the worlds. Love keeps her in the air when she ought to fall down. Tells you she's hurting for she keens. Makes her a home. John Miller Jr. says, the need of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
That's a good one. That's good.
Sean McClain, 1,500 years ago, everyone knew the earth was the center of the universe. 500 years ago, everyone knew the earth was flat. And 15 minutes ago, you knew that people were alone on this planet. Imagine what you'll know tomorrow. What was that from? It's so familiar.
That sounds Pratchett, but I don't want to swear.
That wasn't Independence Day, was it? No, it's driving me nuts because I know that quote. Someone's going to have to fill us in the chat.
Can someone out there say
it? Seems like it was very recent.
Yes. That's why I'm thinking it wasn't Independence Day because that was a while ago. We have 6 viewers. I got to find out how to view the, never mind.
Men in Black. Men in Black.
Oh, it was Men in Black. Thank you. Did you just look that up?
Of course not.
Yes. Scott Reynolds from Spaceballs. I'm a Mog, half man, half dog. I'm my own best friend. Weber Baker says, Clatu Barada Nikto. Ben Switzer, another coworker, wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. Jason yes. Jones, in case you haven't been keeping up with current events, well, we just got our asses kicked, pal.
Game over, man.
That was what I put in there as a seed right. answer. Yeah, yeah. Go straight to plaid, says Steve Pruitt. And Chris Pruitt says, when will then be now? With the video, that's low.
I love that scene. What? We got videos that instantly?
Brad Hastings says, Chewy, if only you had seen what I've seen with your eyes. I don't remember that line for some reason, but I wrote back Happy Life Day.
That's right.
Because that's, yeah, that's what I've seen with my eyes that I don't want to see again. Oh, right. Nick St. Gabriel, a classic. What does God need with a starship?
You need more Shatner in your inflection. But
can't do that one straight face anymore. Craig, do yours in your voice.
All right. I have a couple of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy ones. So it's like having your brain smashed out with a slice of lemon wrapped around a large gold brick. Of course, talking about the intergalactic gargle blaster.
Choked
on it. The gargle blaster. And of course, don't panic. And one I've actually used in conversation a couple of times and got a strange look because they didn't know what I was saying. I said, time is an illusion. Lunchtime, doubly so.
That'd be a good t-shirt imprint as well.
Yeah.
Wait, you guys have time? I have about 1,000 more I want to get to.
Yeah, this could go on all night. Hey, we just
started the show.
Yeah, that'll be episode 500. Just quotes all the time till somebody stops.
Right.
When you're out, you're out. It's going to be like rapid fire. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, let's go on to the history thing. What? Did I miss one? Oh, dice. I forgot. We have a guest in the audience.
In the audience?
In the studio. Here. Take a D20. Right. Well, I had to find those. They kind of wandered away.
Let me warm it up because when the molecules are slow, it didn't roll very well.
Yeah.
Ooh, four.
I got a 15.
I got a 2. All right, I'll do the intro. Right. Craig starts it out with the first bullet.
Yes.
Craig, Jack, Chuck. Craig, Jack, Chuck. Craig, Jack, Chuck.
Okay.
Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Where's the music? Here we go. On this day in history for February 8th, 2017, this is the 39th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 326 days remaining in 2017.
It was on this date in 1587 that Mary, Queen of Scots, is executed on suspicion of having been involved in the Babington plot to murder her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I.
Also today in 1910, the Boy Scouts of America is incorporated by William D. Boyce.
It was also on this date in 1915 that D.W. Griffith's controversial film, The Birth of a Nation, premieres in Los Angeles.
And it was 95 years ago today that the United States President Warren G. Harding introduces the first radio set in the White House. Huh? What?
Hello there.
February 8th, 1960, the first 8 brass star plaques are installed in the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
8? I wonder who was on the original 8. Maybe that was the Hateful 8. It was also on this date in 1971 that the NASDAQ stock market... Wow, NASDAQ's only... Wow, it seems like it should be older than that, but not. It index opens for the first time ever.
Ever. After 84 days in space, the crew of Skylab 4, the last crew to visit the American space station Skylab, aforementioned Skylab, returns to Earth on this date in 1974.
And 39 years ago today, proceedings of the United States Senate are broadcast on radio for the first time.
Here we go with the birthdays, people. This is where it gets fun. Happy birthday goes on this date to Greek astronomer, mathematician, and astrologer Vettius Valens, born on this date in 120.
Hey, when did the Skylab actually land on?
On the Earth?
Or crash out, you know, in Australia?
76? Somewhere in there.
A few years after they left it? Okay.
Well, it launched in 72.
Well, we just said in 74 they had the last crew on
it. Yeah, it was in the 70s. Yeah, well, it was abandoned for a while, and then it eventually, because the orbit decayed, let's go on.
Yeah. Asking the questions, man.
It's your turn, Craig.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because I rolled a 2. Dmitry Mendeleev.
No, it's the next one. the February
born American February. Actress Lana Turner.
No, no. Turner. Oh, I'm sorry. What? Oh, you got it. A Greek mathematician and philosopher. Another Greek. Second bullet. Second bullet.
All right.
Good director.
Oh, that's why y'all were quiet. Oh. Born February 8th, 412. Greek mathematician and philosopher, Proclus.
Actually, I should have let you go with the Russian name there, Craig. Dmitry Mendeleev, the Russian chemist and academic, was born 183 years ago today.
I think it'll get easier from here on out. American actress Lana Turner was born on this date in 1921.
Oh, that would be me again. Jack Lemmon, the American actor, is born 92 years ago today.
Craig, you're still on mute. Craig, are you on this conference call?
Yep, huh? I can't hear y'all.
I've got another meeting. I've got another meeting. I got to step out. American actor and producer Nick Nolte, born on this date in 1941.
Also born that same date in 1955, American lawyer and author John Grisham.
American actor, voice artist, comedian, producer, writer, director, everything. Seth Green is 43 today.
Woohoo! Also,
looks like a little kid.
This bullet goes at the end, but anyway. We also have listener birthdays today. Jan Scott from Yorkshire, UK was born on February 8th. Congratulations to him. He'll be some years old. Some amount. On X.
On the blank.
Sulfur X.
Yeah,
right. Born on the 9th is also podcast Mike Wills. Very loyal listener, commenter from Minnesota. Zach Agulian on the 10th. He's from Appleton. They visited about a year ago. And Drace was also on the 10th, who's also known as Sherry from North Dakota.
Is that like a rap name?
Drace. Yes.
Yo, I'm Drace. Yeah.
You just need one name. Our good friend Douglas E. Welch from the Career Opportunities Podcast was born on the 14th. Happy Valentine's Day to him. And Andrew, the new VP in Illinois. VP of what?
Of Illinois.
And how new?
VP of Illinois. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And finally on the 15th, which rounds out the week from the 8th to the 15th, Philip from Australia was born. Goes on the next show. Oops.
We haven't heard from him in a long time. Two.
I don't know if he's still listening, but if he is, happy birthday to him.
And if you're listening and we said something to offend you, we're sorry.
If we didn't offend you, then we will soon.
Yeah, give us a chance.
If you want to get on the birthday calendar and get offended at some point, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. We'd love to give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. It's easy, it's fun, it's free, and you can do it just like many others have already done. That's the way it was on this date for February 8th, 2017. We've got a little extra music, but I'm just going to fade it out. All right, good enough. Goodbye, right, band. Okay. Next, we have the news. And this is good news, so we have to find a good news clip.
Good news, everyone.
Good news, everyone.
you will never guess which one I'm going to play, because they're all at my fingertips.
I think we got everyone from the whole Futurama run.
Pretty close. I think I might be missing one or two, but that's okay. Yeah. I went through great lengths to extract those. Good news is that cancer patient left with no trace of disease after being given 18 months to live. That would be wonderful news. A man who was given just 18 months to live after being diagnosed with cancer has been left with no trace of the disease after being one of the first in the world to test a new drug. I want a new drug. One that won't make me sick.
One that won't make me cancerous.
Yeah. One that gets rid of my cancer. Bobby Berry is one of just three people to take part in the trial. At the Christie, one of just 12 across the globe. The 60-year-old was diagnosed with lung cancer 3 years ago after suffering pains in his shoulder. His lungs are in his shoulder?
No, I keep reading.
Bob from Hazel Grove in Stockport underwent surgery to remove the tumor, but it was too late. The disease was growing and had already spread to his lymph nodes. He was referred to the Christie for treatment as soon as began grueling course of radiotherapy and chemotherapy, but that was unsuccessful as well. Bob wasn't responding to the drugs. The doctors told him that he had around a year and a half left to live. They decided to transfer him to the hospital's clinical trials unit, and 12 months ago, Bob became one of the first people ever to be treated with a brand new drug, which can't yet be named. It was called Voldemort.
Yeah, don't use the thing.
It was the first. He waved his wand and the cancer was gone, but he's got this funny tattoo on his arm.
It's Horcruxes. That's it.
he hit his soul in a cancer tumor.
Right.
That would be a very appropriate for Voldemort, actually. It was the first time it had been tested on humans, with study taking place only 6 centers worldwide. The treatment combines a new drug with immunotherapy. Woo! Here's a quote. He says, 3 years ago, I was given 12 to 18 months to live, but have already surpassed that, and I feel well. At the end of the day, the clinical trial has extended my life, and I couldn't be more grateful. Anyone who is offered a clinical trial should seriously consider it. Very good for him.
Pretty amazing.
That is amazing. That's hopeful.
Yes.
Cancer sucks. It's taken too many of our friends already.
You know, my wife and I were talking about this. My son brought up the story, and I happened to see it again, and I thought, you know, we should put this on the show. But we were talking in the car, and I kept thinking, you know, imagine news like this. Now, of course, only a few people have taken this drug. Can you imagine one day where cancer is not going to be a big deal?
I sure hope so.
I think at some point that should be the case, because there's so much research and everything. I mean, that, and then you hear something like this, it's like, well, it's certainly possible. So I wonder, you know, just one day, oh, I got cancer. I got to go to the doctor tomorrow. It'll be done in a week.
Right. Yeah, I'm taking a couple of days off. I'll come back. Yeah.
Get rid of this cancer. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was really cool that one day it could be a possibility.
What we will have is threats from other things like robots.
I know. Oh my gosh. Right. Have y'all seen this video?
Go ahead and tell us about it, Craig.
Okay. So this is some leaked video, and I'm sure everybody on the internet's probably seen it by now, but I thought it was relevant to stick it in here. So this leaked video, I like the title, shows new nightmare-inducing wheeled robot from Boston Dynamics. Now, everybody's seen the Boston Dynamics robot, the one that looks like the donkey and the cheetah, you know, with the four legs. They kick it over, and it keeps running, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, this is even more so than that. This is the further pushing the envelope. So Boston Dynamics is best known for its bipedal and quadrupedal robots, but it turns out the company has also been experimenting with some radical new tech. A wheeled robot. I threw the robot part in there.
Can it go up and down stairs?
I don't know. But probably. I wouldn't doubt it. Let's put it that way. So the company's new wheeled upright robot is named Handle because it's supposed to handle objects, and looks like a cross between a Segway and a two-legged Atlas robot. Handle has been officially unveiled, but it was shown off at the, it hasn't been officially unveiled, but it has been shown off by the company founder, Mark Raybert, in a presentation to investors. Footage of the presentation was uploaded to YouTube, as like just about every movie you've seen at Comic-Con, by the venture capitalist Steve Jurvetson, Raybert, describes the Handle as an experiment in combining wheels with legs with very dynamic system that balances itself all the time, and it has a lot of knowledge on how to throw its weight around. He adds that using the wheel is more efficient than legs, although there's obvious trade-off in terms of maneuvering over uneven ground. This is the debut presentation of what I think a nightmare-inducing robot.
That's said by the company founder.
Yeah. I was trying to sign that sentence in right.
It's certainly anyway, a lot faster than the rovers on Mars. This thing cruises, and it comes to a stop on a dime, too.
So you should watch the video, because it is impressive. They show it in a kitchen setting or something like that, and it actually stands up. Does something in the cabinet, like get something out
of
the cabinet.
It kind of looks like a horse reared up on its reared legs.
It's got like a dog leg kind of.
Mm-hmm. Like a horse on its rear wheels, really.
a rocking horse? No way.
But, you know, as impressive as this is, there was another part of the presentation which I thought was cool. And he starts off the robot. They're talking about the rope. It's the rope there, the quadruped that you've seen a million times. It's in a house, and you see it. He starts off the video, and it comes around the corner on like a hardwood floor,
okay,
and it slips and falls. And it goes, everybody kind of laughs. But then all of a sudden it sticks out this arm and pushes itself up and keeps going. Everybody's like, whoa.
Scary. Because,
you know, yeah, it has this arm that kind of folds onto its back. But it comes out and it has like a nice a grabber on it. So you can, it was picking up an aluminum can without bending it. But it was also, they were also showing off the chicken effect of the hand.
The what?
I'm going to say the chicken. You ever seen a chicken where they hold it and they move the chicken, but the head stays in the same place?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what it was doing. It would pick up something, and the robot was jumping up and down, moving, and it was keeping the claw in the same space in space. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. And then they kind of ramped it up, and they started ended up showing the wheeled robot that just kind of blew everybody away.
Did you just coin that phrase, the chicken effect? Is that a new thing that we can attribute to Craig?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I just registered before the show.
I thought cats do that too. You pick up a cat and the head just kind of doesn't move.
A little bit, yeah. I think the chicken more so, but yes, the kit, yeah. Throw my cats up in the air and see them land on their feet. That's a different. But anyway, this is very impressive, and I think it's got a lot of potential.
All right, we're going to take a real quick break. We'll be back. We're done with the serious news. Now we're going to get into the silly news. That's kind of how this show's broken up. So we will be back in just a moment. Stick with us for Hacks and Strange Stories and some Remember Wednesday.
Greetings from TG Geeks Webcast, where
Ben
and Keith, the two gay geeks, talk about all aspects of geekdom and nerdery. Sci-fi, comics, film, horror, genre, you name it, we talk about it.
Find our episodes each week on tggeeks.com.
Visit our Facebook page, TG Geeks Webcast.
On Google+ and YouTube, look for us as Two Gay Geeks. You can tweet at TG Geeks and at the Two Gay Geeks.
Or call our feedback line at 469-TG-GEEKS. That is 469-844-3357. Happy listening. Peace.
Cheers.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics, author of the new book, Physics of the Impossible. Yet, I can't even figure out Technorama.
There's more than one way to do this.
Hey, is there a little reverb on that?
Yes, there is, because it's okay. it's the way the mixer's set up. There's a bit of a loop.
So okay. I thought it was kind of cool.
I think it's kind of cool too, but if we leave it up, if we go like this, then we get the echo for us too.
Ah, no!
Sounds like the morning zoo radio.
Hello, Craig!
When you hear the word of the day, scream real loud!
Yeah, that ain't gonna happen.
Yep, you can tell Sirius is out the window.
That's right. This is the part where we do the Hacks and Strange Stories. Our first Hacks and Strange Story. This is a story, but you know, I'm gonna leave this one to Jack just because I feel this is Jack material.
Hey, now.
As soon as this finishes loading up, there we go.
Because of his love of dental work.
Oh, yes.
Fraud is more like it.
Yeah, I'm having flashbacks. Hang on. Actually, I like that the author of the article is spooky. So, 25-year-old fake dentist ran his own dental clinic after picking up skills on YouTube.
Wow.
Yikes. See, I thought this was actually going to be an article about Peter Capaldi, you know, because it's something about...
That's coming up. Okay. Oh. You can have that one, too.
Fake doctor.
It turns out the dentistry is so easy that anyone can do it. Case in point, 25-year-old Mohamed Irwan Maud Sudi from Kuantan, Malaysia, who used YouTube videos and dentistry magazines to hone his skills to the point where he was able to open his own dental clinic and perform various procedures. Instead of spending 6 years in dental schools to pick up the necessary skills to become a licensed dentist, Irwan decided to take a different route. He learned all he needed to perform procedures like tooth extraction, teeth scaling, and placing braces by watching all kinds of video tutorials on YouTube, and reading dentistry magazines. It's not clear exactly how much time he put into honing his skills, but he apparently became so confident in his abilities that at one point he opened his own unauthorized dental clinic in Perkambangan, Indiran Sempurna.
Yeah. Stop it, Chuck. I'm trying to listen to Jack.
I make you feel like you're in a dentist's office.
Hey.
Rinse and spit.
Jack. It said, you know, it takes, what did it say, 6 years to get a dental license?
Right.
And he probably took him 5 years to study all this stuff.
No. I can see going to YouTube for some basic skills. I learned how to install a garage door opener, reprogram my garage remote. But dentistry? He probably printed out a PDF for his license, too. And go, there, done. Nailed it.
Hey, when I had my Volkswagen Beetle, my new Beetle, I remember thinking, okay, there's the alternator. Let me go. I went on YouTube. Here's a guy showing me exactly how to remove it. I went and did it. Like, then.
This brings up a fundamental question. How do you know the doctor you're visiting has really been certified? I was just at the eye doctor yesterday to get my eyes checked up, annual exam. Walked in there, you know, he did the puff of the eye thing and the flipping of the lenses, better one, better two, read the top line, bottom line. And there were certificates on the wall with his name, but I don't know. Maybe he got his stuff on YouTube and printed PDFs as well. How do you know?
Well, there's no registry to go check. It's not like Carfax. Hey, it's not like Carfax where you can go see if your car's been in an accident.
Maybe there is. Maybe there's like a doctor thing.
Yeah. Dr. Facts.
Dr. Facts. This is frightening.
What do you think, Jack?
I think there is. I think, or maybe I'm just, you know, blindly having too much blind faith in the establishment and the systems that be. But I'm pretty sure, especially if you're going through your insurance, and I guess if your doctor is a quack, you can report to your insurance.
On the other hand,
hey, he's in my network.
If he's providing a service to the people in Malaysia and they couldn't have had this service before, and he's not raking them over the coals for money, because there's probably not as many malpractice suits there as there is here in the U.S., that, you know, this may not be a bad thing.
You know, something that happens a lot here is in Arizona is that people go south of the border to get much, much cheaper dental or all kinds of medical procedures and medications. And I don't, who knows how if things are regulated just as strictly down there or if it's a little bit looser.
You want that sterilized? That's an extra $20 or 20 pesos. Otherwise, it's just wiping on your sleeve. Well, good enough.
Let me ask you. So at what point, I guess I'm trying to figure out if he has the skills. If he's honest with the clients, does it matter? Do you have to have a medical license to do?
If he's honest with his clients. Now, there's no way to tell whether or not he was or not.
Just ask him. He'll tell you.
Where'd you get your license? YouTube?
You tie a string to the tooth, tie the other end to the door.
Doctor, it's a miracle.
That used to be kind of the standing joke. We had, when I was a kid, you know, where'd you get your license? Shopko? Shopko being a shopping center in the Midwest.
Yeah, right.
But now it's going to be, where'd you get your license? YouTube?
But yeah, pretty much. Hey, by the way, I like the picture of him jetting out the office with the paper covering his face.
Yes. Classic.
No, I'm embarrassed.
Not really me. All right, shout out to the chat room. You can watch us live every Sunday night on Facebook. I almost said YouTube, but we haven't done that for several months. Facebook at 9:30 Eastern time. We'd love to see you there. Just go to our webpage, chuckchat.com. You'll find it there. Or the Facebook page. We've got a few people in the chat room right now. Yeah. Yes.
Tiffany says the banana bread is in the oven. So
take that, Super Bowl 51. Go over to Jack.
We're going over to Jack's after the show.
No,
that's actually a code.
The banana bread, air quotes,
they've been married less than a year. You figure it out.
So I'm not even sure what you guys mean. That's not where I was going.
Yeah.
That means pick up some stuff at the grocery store.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, we have a couple articles in the Remember When segment. Let me find this.
You're going to tell everybody? You're not going to call out who's in the chat room?
Who's in the chat? Well, we said Tiffany's in the chat room. We got Jack Jaffe. I was on my way to Jack, but you interrupted.
Oh, look. My cousin Jade is in there.
He is? How do you know that?
She is. Yeah, Jade Flores. That's my cousin.
Are you looking?
I can see the icon. I can see the icon.
Maybe I need to do a screen refresh because I'm only seeing about 8 comments.
Okay, so we have Jack Jaffe.
Yeah.
Cynthia Fry.
Yeah.
Tiffany Megan giving her secret messages to Jack.
Banana bread.
And my cousin Jade, who says, she says you can check nursing certifications online. So I'm sure you can check MDs too.
All right.
There you go. In response, the dough will be rising.
Too late.
My mind went to an old Bugs Bunny cartoon.
All right, let's move along.
Okay, yeah. And then remember when we've got computer progress versus cars from 1982 to 2017. This is a lot of fun, and I see this come up every few years. All right, I haven't seen it in about 20
years.
Actually,
when I saw the title here, I kept thinking of that. I'm not sure if it's a real quote from Bill Gates where he's talking about if, you know, cars are kept up with computers.
I believe that is.
But there's a joke in there about them crashing like windows.
Oh, no, that's not. Yeah. Every time you got in your car, you'd have to get on a different road.
Oh, wait a minute. Tiffany, update. Timothy says, the oven is hot.
Wow. The idea of comparing the pace of development of computers and cars has been around for a while. Snopes traced the idea all the way back to some early internet joke in 1997, even. That's about when I first heard of it. Fundamentally, it's sort of an absurd comparison. The two technologies are so different. They're really not comparable in any way. Just for fun, fully aware of that. Yes, it's kind of stupid. I just wanted to crunch some numbers about specs on cars and computers over the last 35 years of development and see what happens. For the 1982 side, I picked the Apple II Plus. Hey, there's one over there. Actually, that's a 2E, but close enough. And a popular computer of the era that was introduced many of us to the joys of virtually dying of dysentery. For the car, I went to pick something that we still have today, so I went with a base level four-cylinder Ford Mustang. Oh, yeah, the 82 Mustang was just a peach, wasn't it?
Is there a four-cylinder nowadays?
No, I believe the Mustang is 6 or even 8.
All sixes?
Yeah. Yeah. For the year...
No, wait a minute. It says EcoBoost 4-cylinder.
We're getting there. For the year of our snappy Lord 2017, I'll use Apple's current base level desktop computer, the 21.5-inch iMac, and the 4-cylinder base Mustang with EcoBoost. Who's going to buy a 4-cylinder Mustang? That's a muscle
car.
I
want the Mustang hybrid.
Hey, it might have better acceleration. Careful.
Maybe.
Okay, I picked 4 specs to measure for each of them. The computers, I picked RAM, storage memory capacity, CPU speed, and price. For the car, I picked horsepower fuel economy in MPG, 0 to 60 miles per hour time in seconds, and price. Equating the metrics isn't perfect, so here we go. In 1982, the Apple II had 48K of memory, 1 megahertz CPU speed, and 140 kilobytes of storage. That was basically a floppy disk, and it cost $16.95 with the drive. Okay. For the computer today, it's 8 gigabytes, a little bit different than 48K, 1.6 gigahertz CPU speed, a 1 terabyte hard drive, and it's $10.99 for the price. So it's actually less. Now, compare the cars. You had 22 miles per gallon back then. Now you have 20. It went backwards. 16.2 seconds to go from 0 to 60. Now it's 5.5. So there's more muscle in there because you went from an 88 horsepower motor to a 310 horsepower motor. And the cost went from a paltry $67.89 to a princely sum of $26,195 for the base model. So let's do some comparisons. If cars had kept up with computers, you would now have a 660 million horsepower engine, which would allow you to go from 0 to 60 in about 3/1000ths of a second. That would put your brains in the back of your head real fast. And you'd get about 3.6 million miles to the gallon. You can get to the moon, I think. And it would cost $4,471. I like that car. But if computers were held to the same pace as cars, it would be more like the 43.2K of memory. It would run at a whopping 2.9 megahertz, and it would be able to store 490K of data, and now it would cost $65.29, because it's about 3 times as much. Ooh, that makes me shudder either way.
Well, I mean, no computer will ever need more than 64K of memory, right? I mean...
No car will ever need more than 3.6 million gallons, miles to the gallon.
I remember telling people, oh, you'll never need any more than 256.
Uh-oh. I might have a Dewey versus Truman thing going on here. It says Patriots versus Falcons game is headed into overtime.
What? Saying, what?
Patriots must have had a good fourth quarter. Or the Falcons got points taken away. All right. Also in the Remember When segment, we have the submarine portrayed in Raiders of the Lost Ark has been discovered.
What?
There was dead silence after that. Yes, German researchers have discovered the wreck of the U-581, a Nazi sub that sunk in the Azores on February 1942. The 220-foot-long VIIC U-boat, would that make it a Vicu boat?
Oh, it's okay. It was what it was modeled after.
The same type of sub featured in the classic film Das Boot and Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was found broken in two at a depth of nearly 3,000 feet. Researchers with the German Rebikov Nigeler Foundation found the wreck last September and chose to withhold the finding until the precise identity of the sub could be confirmed. And because they wanted to make the announcement public on the 75th anniversary of the ship sinking, working aboard the dive boat Lula 1000, their researchers were able to take high-resolution pictures of the sunken submarine, revealing its condition and the many corals now clinging to its outer shell. The German U-boat 581 was the sister ship of the famous U-96 sub, which is featured in the 81 film Das Boot.
Mm-hmm.
An exterior mock-up of the sub was also used in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Spielberg rented the replica used in Das Boot. Over 560 VIIC-class U-boats were commissioned from 1940 to 1945. That must have been a terrifying time to roam the seas, wouldn't it?
Right.
Appearing in virtually all areas where German subs were operated, known as the workhorse of the German Kriegsmarine, these subs featured active sonar and were powered by six-cylinder, four-stroke diesel engines. VIICs weighed 770 tons, had a range of 9,800 miles, and could cruise above water at speeds reaching 20 miles an hour. During World War II, Germans lost nearly 800 submarines of all types and 28,000 U-boat sailors.
What? 800? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, in the beginning, they were running in these wolf packs and really doing damage to the shipping. But once the U.S. got involved and they were launching, what was the name of the boats? The, I can't remember. Liberty ships. And started working with the airplanes for spotting. Then the tide really turned, so to speak, on the submarines. I love the story a little bit down here. Where is it? One guy actually survived. It said, of the 46 crewmen, four were killed when the water bomb was thrown at them. It sounded like they threw a water balloon at them. While they were still in the water, apparently the result of a communication breakdown. 41 were taken prisoner, and one, quite incredibly, was able to escape. Officer Walter Schietek, I hope I'm saying that correctly, managed to swim 4 miles or 6 kilometers to land. The Spanish officials who found Schietek repatriated him to Germany, where he survived the war, as did the German POWs. That's pretty cool.
It is cool.
They found the ship.
So now that they found that, maybe they can explain how Indiana Jones survived that long voyage when he swam to that ship and then somehow stayed on the hull of a submarine all the way from the middle of the Atlantic into Germany.
Maybe
I can answer that question. I can answer that question.
Do you know Go ahead.
In the comic book.
I read it because factual.
After Raiders, you know, they had, of course, the official adaption. And I was, I read it and I remember him holding on to the periscope, you know, as it was going across the ocean. I would think that you'd be pretty waterlogged by the time you got to wherever you're going. Hopefully they didn't go too far.
Well, everybody else is waterlogged because the uniform he put on shrunk.
Right. Anyway. But I watched all the Raider or Indiana Jones movies are on Hulu or were, and I watched them all. And I remember thinking, three and a half. But I remember watching Raiders and I kept thinking, what is it about him how did he stay on that? And went, oh, I remembered. And it dawned on me. I remembered reading the comic where he was holding on to the periscope for dear life.
Oh, Nope, that'd be a long time because it would probably take a day or two to get there.
Well, hopefully that little island they went to wasn't too far away.
No, well, the one that this guy swam to was only 4 miles away. That's still a long swim in the ocean.
Right.
Want to give a quick shout out to our patrons? Let's play the Patreon music. This show is brought to you by you. Thank you. Because a donation to us is cheaper than a Super Bowl ad. By a long shot.
Hey, but we're willing to take $1.2 million.
That's right. We have a special donation at the end of this. Thank you to our patrons who enabled us to keep the show running. And all the special episodes, we bring them Kyle Nishioka, Chris MC, Nick St. Gabriel, John Noble. Thank you very much. Mike Wills, whom we mentioned before. Happy birthday to him. And Alexis Duran, Amy Bowen, Steve Therian, Ben Vaughn, Avner Braverman, Saturday Morning Media, Dennis Patnod, and Leon. We would love to get you on this list and give you a shout out and a lot of gratitude. We also want to give a special shout out to Fritz Ulrich Sievert. I hope I'm close on that. For his PayPal donation that he dropped in just about an hour or so before the show started.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. That is graciously appreciated. Keeps the bank account going and the show as well. Yes.
And also, as always, my table is not full. There's three missing spots on this HTML table.
Add another row.
And my OCD is really kicking in, so we need three more people to fill it in.
At least three. Seven would be good.
Actually, we can only register Patreons four at a time.
Be part of the next three so we can start on our next four.
What? Be part of the next four in the wave. There you go.
Just let's do four just to screw with Craig some more.
Yeah. Keep doing it.
That'll be fun. Media Corner time, I do believe, my good man.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Not here.
In the Media Corner.
End things. I told the end things story on Friday and they rubbed it in. So I know I'm among friends with fellow podcasters.
Yes.
All right, Jack, here's your Doctor Who article. When do we find out who Peter Capaldi's replacement is going to be?
Wait, who?
When? Where?
What? Well, the article title said it's going to be a long time.
Yeah, that's basically it. The end. Good day. Good article. Thanks for the read.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Earlier this week, Peter Capaldi confirmed that he would be departing Doctor Who at the end of 2017, and instantaneously, media outlets across the world began pondering just who will step in the TARDIS next. But if you're excited to H-E-R-E about a post-Moffat, post-Capaldi Who right now, you're going to have to wait. Amidst the frenzied speculation and bookmakers' odds flinging around the internet this week, the Radio Times reports that while Capaldi's decision to leave Doctor Who has been known for a while inside the BBC, the process of finding his successor has yet to begin and won't be beginning for at least several more months. This is mainly because the search for a 13th Doctor will only get away when incoming showrunner Chris Chibnall is ready to begin laying out the plans for his first season on the show, which is currently expected to air in autumn 2018. That process won't begin at least until the middle of this year, according to the Radio Times, as Chibnall is still hard at work putting the finishing touches on the third and final season of his popular, but bleak, that was added by me, crime drama Broadchurch. Chibnall told Radio Times he expects to take a short break after finishing Broadchurch before he starts preparing Doctor Who's 11th season. Not quite the 11th, but partially because of the hectic nature of moving from managing one big show to another, but also to give Capaldi and Moffat the chance to finish production of their final season of Who without the specter of their replacements hanging over them. So while there's the closest thing to a hard date on when we'll see the next Doctor in action, they'll be a part of Capaldi's regeneration scene in the 2017 Christmas special, presumably. It's going to be a good few months before we hear anything official about who'll be playing the new Doctor, and then an even longer wait for season 11. Although I guess Doctor Who fans are getting pretty good at waiting for things at this point.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, they're not starting the search for a few months, so you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know about y'all, but I just want to bring this up. I actually liked Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. I liked him a lot. I think I like Smith and Tennant a little bit more. I had a Doctor crush on Tennant for a while, but I like Smith a lot, and I like Peter Capaldi, so I don't know what y'all think.
I haven't watched a whole lot of the Capaldi ones. to be honest. I just haven't had a chance to squeeze that in. And, you know, Clara was kind of bugging me, so I just never put it to the top of my priority list. So I think I've watched maybe one of any of the Capaldi ones.
Yeah, she was one of those characters I was interested in at first, and then it just like drug out. I'm like, all right, forget it. I'm done.
Yep.
How about you, Jack?
You know, actually, I'll try and repeat what I said that got a bunch of likes the other day. So it must have been poignant and smart about this. But, you know, I really liked him a lot. I think he was a really good actor and played the role with a lot of relish. I think he had a lot of bad episodes. And to be honest, I don't know, for whatever reason, and again, repeating what I said, it was basically whether it's because there's no more romance on the show or because he's an old guy and instead of like a handsome, dashing young guy. I don't know what the reason is, but I can't drum up a whole lot of interest in Doctor Who around my house anymore. You know, there's that new Christmas episode that was out, and I'm saying, hey, why don't we watch that? And I kind of get, okay. I don't get, oh my God, there's new Doctor Who to watch.
It's right.
Like, all right. And that's a shame, because I think Capaldi would have been up to the task if there hadn't been so many kind of duds during his tenure.
Yeah, he could have used a little better scripting, I think. You're right. But I liked him. I thought he had a lot of potential. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say the next Doctor will be a comely 40-something woman.
So who's woman?
Kind of, yes. Oh. Also, you know, kind of interesting looking.
Like, I would like to see a female doctor. That would throw a new dynamic at the show.
I prefer female doctors, as a matter of fact.
Well, careful, actually, Craig. That's TMI.
Yeah. There has been a lot of talk about getting a female doctor on the show. So Now might be the perfect time.
As long as they get their qualifications from YouTube.
Nice. Yeah. Tie back. Right. There you go.
Ba-dum-tsh.
All righty. And with that, we'll move into our last story about Star Trek Voyager and Deep Space Nine may never get Blu-ray HD versions, unfortunately. It boils down to a cost thing. Pretty much ever since the Blu-ray remasters of the original Star Trek series and the Next Generation were unveiled, fans have been wondering, when will we see DS9 and Voyager? They should deserve the special same treatment. But according to Robert Mayer Burnett, who worked extensively on the HD re-releases of those series, the odds of ever seeing such a thing are incredibly low. Speaking to Trek News in an incredibly lengthy interview, Burnett detailed the reasons why fully HD versions of Deep Space Nine and Voyager would be Herculean tasks for CBS and Paramount to release. Basically, until recently, TV was shot in 35mm film, which is already high resolution, too high resolution for the early days of television. The film footage was edited together, archived, and then shrunk down to the more manageable NTSC video resolution for broadcast. As such, the Blu-ray releases for the older Trek series could use the original negative to create full HD releases relatively easy, and each episode's film was already edited together. But by the mid-1980s, video technology had advanced enough to the point where many TV shows, including Star Trek The Next Generation, were no longer editing 35mm film footage, but scanning it into computers, transforming it into lower TV-friendly resolution, and edited from there to save money. In TNG's case, that helped make the VFX work on the show easier, but it also meant there are all the show's film was left in separate pieces. Essentially, the HD release of Star Trek, all the people had to do was scan the episode. For Next Generation, they would have to scan all those original pieces of film, then edit together again themselves. Yeah. It's more difficult, more expensive, and much more time-consuming. What's amazing is that they actually did this for TNG's Blu-ray release, which was a radical, unprecedented, and incredibly daunting task. Following the edited tape versions that were originally broadcast, a new team painstakingly recreated every episode of the show from 35mm film footage, and the process cost millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. A lot, yes.
But as TNG is the jewel in the Star Trek crown for the legions of fans, it was seen as worth it. Unfortunately, it wasn't actually worth it. Sales of the extravagant TNG remaster, the original retail price was $118 for just season one, failed to reach CBS and Paramount's expectation. Gee, you think at $118 each episode, each season? Sorry. A similar process would have to be done for both DS9 and Voyager, and would actually be even harder. Both shows extensively use CGI effects that were only ever rendered in the lower videotape resolution, which means all the show's special effects would have to be done completely over. But neither show is anywhere near as popular to public consciousness as TNG. It's simply too much effort for not enough value proposition. So, a long story made short and depressing, DS9 and Voyager aren't popular enough to be worth the incredible effort it would take to make them available in a high-def format.
Well, not about popular enough, but I will say, I mean, I understand CBS, Paramount, or whoever's...
It's a money thing.
Technically behind it. I mean, they're not a not-for-profit, so, I mean, there's a lot of money to drop to revamp the whole thing. So, I mean, I see their point, you know, don't you?
I do, and this is where I get into the idea of why not crowdsource it? You have a lot of fans out there with a lot of talent. So
Kickstarter.
Well, not Kickstarter, but you could parcel it out so that the whole thing wouldn't be available on the internet at one time. I might be working on just this one effect of a planet. Okay. I'm in charge of planets, so I get seven scenes in this show that involve a space shot of a planet. Boom. That's my stuff. I turn it in and it would speed up the process. It would reduce the cost. And who cares if it takes a year or 2 years to get this done? It would get done. Right?
Well, what about, wait a minute. So Do you remember where they had people crowdsource reproducing Star Wars, and they used like what 10-second pieces, so people could, they would say, okay, pick a 10-second piece that you want, and they would recreate it. And it was like some of them were done with puppets, some of it was done with cardboard cutouts, and you know, it was kind of fun to watch, but it was a little disjointed. I can imagine. You'd have to get some people that were qualified to actually work on this when you're talking about crowdsourcing these people. You don't want a cardboard, you know, people walk, Ferengis walking around.
Oh, no, we do. Yes. Absolutely. Please make that happen.
I just said that. I was thinking, yes, actually, graphics. I would. Yeah. Hey, or remember that Sunday school thing y'all did a long time ago with the
Legos?
Things on sticks? No, the thing on sticks.
Yes. No, that wasn't Sunday school. That was like a video Julie did for with the lion, cool, the cheetah, yeah, eating the,
yeah,
yeah.
It still got to look better than the Gorn, right? That
Kirk fought. That's
actually
true.
It might make that fight more interesting.
Big rubber suits.
Yeah. So it sucks, but you know what I think was part of the problem with TNG was, I know that there was a daunting task, and I appreciate it because I pre-ordered the one episode. It was like, you know, before they released the whole thing, it was months ahead, and I got one episode, and it, with the encounter at Farpoint, and it was really cool to see. It was like, wow, this is pretty clear. Yeah. But the problem was all these episodes were available, not for free, but on Netflix and Amazon, which are still, they still are. So my thought was, why would I buy the DVD when it's on every streaming service I subscribe to?
That's a good point too.
Yeah. I mean, physical media is kind of old technology. It's really becoming obsolete. I mean, young people are like, kind of like, what would I do with a DVD or a Blu-ray disc?
I mean, yeah.
I know a lot of them come with the digital download anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're really just buying a license to use.
How many times, all right, I should have put this as the question of the week.
Here it comes.
How many times have you wanted to watch a movie, you own the Blu-ray, but because it wasn't on Netflix, you said, nah, never mind.
I don't think I've turned it down that badly.
Like, yeah,
Craig,
that's
just pure sloth, man. I'm too lazy to get up and put the DVD in there.
Yeah, I got to touch that box over there.
But it's probably not too far off that, you know, DVD players are going to go the way of VHS players.
Come on, Jack. You've had that experience, haven't you?
You know, it takes almost like a full second for that drawer to open. I mean, who has that kind of time?
I don't. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Time is money. And another second to close the darn thing.
Jeez, I'm already exhausted. Yeah,
put it now in. We got to get them an FBI warning.
Alrighty, that takes us to the end of the show. Our question of the week this time around is, what movie has the best opening scene and you can't say Star Wars Episode 4?
Yeah.
I'm putting a clamp on that one.
Full disclosure, I did see this question on Reddit, but I thought it was such a good question for a show, so I thought it was appropriate.
What, you think? Actually, you think I make up all these questions too? I steal them.
Oh, you don't? Oh man,
sometimes I do.
Actually, you know what? I'll throw one out there right now, and it's more of a recent one. I wouldn't say greatest, best, but really good one was the opening of Star Wars. Force Awakens. Oh my gosh, my mind went blank. Force Awakens, when you see the planet and it just starts going black, it's because of Star
Destroyers. You cheated. Whatever. That's just a clone of Star Wars Episode 4. Because filtered that one out.
No, the beginning of it. You know, you see the planet, and then you just see the shadow going over the planet. It's a Star Destroyer. You know, and it's like, visually, I thought it was pretty cool.
I thought visually the lighting was screwed up. Where's the light coming from that it illuminates the planet one way and a ship another way? Yeah. Come on.
That was the lightning flare. Yeah.
How about you, Jack? You got one?
I have a couple. I don't want to ruin it for everyone who wants to play. I would say, so just off the top of my head, I'll just say one or two. Memento, if you remember that movie, that was a really cool little opening.
The backwards movie.
Yes. Very good. Good stuff. And of course, I guess I'm going to steal this one from everyone else, but the first two Indiana Jones movies, since we touched on them earlier, great opening. I mean, the Raiders opening is about as good as it gets. Hey, and
actually, I can top that.
Go for it.
Not that we're competing, but my favorite probably ever was The Last Crusade. You know, the whole scene. I mean, it was more than one scene.
Yes.
The whole opening.
Yeah.
But where they're on the scout trip and they get the Cross of Coronado and they're running in the train, the whole thing. I thought it was really cool.
River Phoenix was young Indiana Jones. Yeah, three of them. Okay, you're right. I sit corrected. All three of them.
See, I topped it. Boom.
Although I know that I've heard a lot of complaints actually about the musical number that opens Temple of Doom, but I think it's great.
I thought I rewatched the Raiders movie or Indiana Jones movies. I liked that, the Temple of Doom. I liked especially the opening because it was just, I remember seeing it in a theater thinking, this is different from what I was expecting. This is kind of cool though.
Yeah, I'll stick up. I mean, maybe it's a controversial view, but I'll stick up for that movie too. Oh. I think it's got some bad parts, but it's good.
And Willie Scott. Oh gosh.
Many Star Trek movies have good opening scenes too. I'm going to have to go and look at a lot of, I'm going to have to review. There's a lot to choose from. I'm not going to cast my vote yet, but we'll see what the,
Raiders or, Last Crusade,
what the Facebook group comes up with.
Sorry for stealing those guys. It's Indiana Jones.
That takes us to the end of this show. We appreciate your support. If you want to be,
wait a minute, don't apologize to the listener, Jack.
Patron.
That's right.
First rule of podcasting.
No, you're not supposed to apologize because you've been gone. Yeah. Apologize. Yeah.
It's my inner Canadian.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go look up how to speak Canadian. No, there's one called how to speak Minnesotan. That's just good. Anyway, give us a call on the listener line, 707-530-CHAT, 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. There's always comments on Facebook, etc. There's the music I was looking for. Whew, good thing these buttons are easier to hit these days.
Hey, guess what? The Patriots pulled it out.
The what?
The Patriots pulled it out.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, 34-28. They had a really good fourth quarter. I'm disappointed. Really, I am. I thought the Falcons had it in them, but that's not what we're here to talk about. Because by the time you hear this, it's already history. We'll have to cover it next year on this day in history. The Falcons won again. Patriots won again.
Hey, we did cover the football and Technorama.
Give me a. Give me a binary high five, Craig.
101.
Thanks for joining us, Jack.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun.
And we'll see you next time. I think I have a soundbite here, too.
Turn off that crap-o-rama.